Hello and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. As part of KBNF's midterm election coverage, we're featuring portions of the Club 20 debates over the next few weeks. Club 20 provides a forum for discussion of controversial issues and works to represent the interests of the Western Slope of Colorado at all levels of government. The group held candidate debates at the Two Rivers Convention Center in September. Today we'll hear from the candidates in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, Republican incumbent Scott Tipton and his Democratic challenger Diane Mitch Bush. The 3rd Congressional District covers most of western Colorado, including the counties of Delta, Garfield, Gunnison, Hinsdale, Mesa, Montrose, Ouray, Pitkin, San Juan, and San Miguel counties. And now we go to the debate.
Moderating the 3rd Congressional District debate is Club 20 Board Chair Cindy Dozier.
Good evening again. We're excited to have this 3rd Congressional District debate with our two candidates. Our panelists over here are Bob Murphy, President of AARP Colorado, Sandra Hart from Chevron, and Mike Murphy, Lake City business owner and Club 20 member. Our first candidate at the center podium will be Republican Scott Tipton, the incumbent. At our second podium is Democratic candidate Diane Mitch Bush. Thank you for your kind applause, and we welcome both of our candidates and thank them for their willingness to serve Western Colorado and for participating in our Club 20 debates. We will begin with opening remarks. There was a coin toss that was conducted prior to this debate, and Scott Tipton has been selected to begin opening remarks.
Well, thank you, Cindy, and I'd like to be able to thank Club 20 and all of you for taking the time to be able to be here. I think all of us need, though, with the upcoming commemoration of 9/11, to pause for a moment to be able to recognize that freedom is not free. And I hope you'll join with me in recognizing the brave men and women of the United States military who fought to keep this nation free. Would you join with me in recognizing them? You know, given what we've had here in our district, I think it's also very important that we recognize the brave firefighters, EMTs, our sheriffs, and our police departments as well for all of their hard work to be able to keep us safe. During the time that I've had the privilege to be able to represent the 3rd Congressional District of Colorado, we've focused on what's important for our district. To be able to create jobs, to be able to create opportunities, to make sure that we're protecting private property rights, like our protecting our private property rights when it comes to water, something that we will continue to make sure that we're standing for, but also to make sure that we're creating opportunities for jobs. We can achieve this, actually, with our resilient forest bill that we passed through the House of Representatives with bipartisan support, to be able to create jobs right here and to be able to create healthy forests for our communities, standing up for our veterans. Pleased to be able to report to you that we have closed positively 3,000 cases for our veterans to make sure that they are getting the benefits that they deserve. That amounts to about 6% of the 54,000 veterans who live within the 3rd Congressional District. And we've also been very focused on something that's impacting every community in our district, our state, and the nation. And that's the opioid crisis and the heroin crisis that impacted so many. We've held 30 roundtables around our district. We provide funding now to be able to make sure that we're getting resources back to be able to address that. Standing up for Jordan Cove, moving to get the BLM moved right here to be able to create jobs and to make sure that we have the people that are making decisions know how we're being impacted right here at home. We have some disagreements. My opponent wants to be able to expand a single health care payer plan with Bernie Sanders, Nancy Pelosi, and Elizabeth Warren. Tonight, I expect Bernie won't tell us, maybe you will, how high you're going to raise our taxes to be able to provide for that big government takeover of healthcare that you envision. It's a privilege to be able to represent this district. look forward to our conversation tonight, and I thank you all again for taking the time to be able to be here.
Now, candidate Diane Mitch Bush will have 3 minutes for her opening remarks.
Thank you. It's so great to be back at Club 20. I was privileged to serve on the Club 20 board for 6 years, and especially privileged to be appointed to the executive committee for 2 of those years. Club 20 has a way of looking at policy that I think we all need to heed. In Club 20, we listen to each other. We look at the facts. We look at the evidence. And we come together and discuss the possibilities. That's what makes good policy. Not ideology. Not listening to what party leadership does or says or wants us to do. But instead, listening to the people and doing your homework. That's been my MO the whole time I served in the Colorado House, and before that in Rock County as a county commissioner. I was known at the Colorado House not only for my integrity, my transparency, and my ability to work across the aisle, but you don't have to believe me. Over 80% of my bills were co-prime sponsored. Not a co-sponsor, 2 sponsors. Me and a Republican. It is critical now, more than ever, that we work across the aisle, listen to each other, and be civil and respond to the constituents' needs, not the needs of Washington insiders or big donors. I'm very proud of my record in the Colorado House at cutting red tape. I worked with Western Slope representatives on several bills. One of them was a hydro bill. Before our bill, anyone who wanted to do micro-hydro, had those water rights and could do it, had to go through the same process as though you were doing the Hoover Dam. Instead, what we did is work together to streamline that process. And we can do that, remove red tape in so many different ways at the federal level, if only we listen to each other and look at the facts. In 2015, I was honored as Legislator of the Year by 2 very different organizations, the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union and the Colorado Livestock Association. They're very different in terms of their political affiliations, but they both saw the way I'd worked to remove obstacles for young farmers and ranchers. In the U.S. Congress, we need to fight for agriculture. In the U.S. Congress, we need to fight for an economy that works for everyone. And we need to fight for health care that's available and quality and affordable. The situation we have now is something Bob Rankin and I tried to work on at the State House. Thank you.
Thank you. Each candidate will now be asked to respond to 6 questions from our 3-member panel. Each candidate will have 1.5 minutes to respond to each question. The candidate who goes first on each question will also have an opportunity to offer a 30-second rebuttal to the other candidate's response for that particular question. The candidate that went first in opening remarks will offer the first response to the first question, and that will be Scott Tipton.
Almost immediately after the 2016 election, the House passed a bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but didn't really include any clear thoughts as to what a replacement plan might look like or how it would be implemented. Since that time, the Senate has considered several similar bills, none of which have passed, and generally they've only suggested insurance reform to protect insurance companies. In your opinion, what should an effective health care bill include and not include?
Just to be able to correct that a little bit, through the House, we did pass legislation that the Senate failed to be able to take up and to be able to pass. I think it's important that we step back just a little bit. Under the Affordable Care Act, we were promised, not that our rates would slow in the rate of increase, but they would go down on average $2,500. You want to be able to keep your insurance policy? You can. Your doctor? You can. None of that turned out to be true. What we are providing was something that I think that we all ought to be able to agree on. We want to be able to have affordability, but where we live also, we need to be able to have accessibility. To be able to achieve that end, we passed through the House of Representatives a bill to be able to have association health care, for us to be able to come together to form larger groups, to be able to actually lower those costs, to be able to have capitalism, to be able to buy across state lines, to be able to have real choice in terms of what is best going to work for us and what is going to be able to work for our families. We passed through the House of Representatives a provision you cannot be denied. If you're worried about pre-existing conditions, you could not be denied health care insurance under the bill that we have put forward. We're incentivizing private medical health care savings accounts with pre-tax dollars so that you could take care of those incidental costs, to be able to, again, lower the costs, and to be able to make choices for you and your family. Not to have a one-size-fits-all program set out by the government.
Thank you. Diane, you have 1.5 minutes for your response.
On May 4th, 2017, Mr. Tipton voted for the president's health care plan, claiming that this plan would, quote, lower your premiums and lower your deductibles. In fact, I read the bill. I read bills. That's what I do. And many healthcare analysts agree. This plan would have increased our premiums and increased our deductibles. The Senate didn't pass it. What should we have in a really good healthcare plan? We should have pre-existing conditions actually covered. In the association plans that he is talking about, yes, there's a requirement that the insurance company provide coverage for pre-existing conditions. What it can do, though, is that can charge any price for them. There's no price cap. So it'll be just like previously when most people could not afford insurance for their pre-existing conditions. And they might not even know that this wasn't covered, or if it was, that they'd have to pay through the nose for it, because, of course, that's the fine print. I think it's really important for us to defend Medicare and to defend the Children's Health Insurance Program in any health bill that we have, and moreover, to be sure that we continue to fund our rural health clinics.
Thank you. Scott, you have a 30-second rebuttal.
Good news for my opponent. We voted to be able to extend Children's Health Insurance Program 10 years, fully funded, and I just received a nationwide award from the Colorado Health Clinics for the work that we have done to make sure that we're getting those funded as well. If you go back to the actual legislation that we put forward, what she didn't bother to read is you could not be denied health care insurance under the current plan. Look at your $6,500-plus deductible. Ask, is that working for you? Are your increased premiums working for you? They are not. She wants to add on to it.
Our second question, coming from Sandra, will first be addressed to Diane.
Energy production is a critical economic driver for many Western Colorado communities. In your view, what is the future role of fossil fuel resources produced in Colorado in providing for our energy needs, and how do economics, energy security, politics, environmental considerations, and other related factors influence your view?
I come from a coal county and from an oil and gas county. As a county commissioner, I signed permits both for coal and for oil and gas, and we held those companies through stakeholder processes to very important environmental and community and traffic protections. Oil and gas and coal are both great jobs, but they also cost local counties money, so you have to balance that. One of the critical things to bear in mind about jobs in both those industries, oil and gas and coal, is that they are so affected by the international market. When you look at coal, what you've seen is a dramatically decreasing import demand from China. Why? Because they're turning to natural gas, and they're turning to renewables, and they're also importing what coal they have yet to utilize from Australia. So contrary to what some argue, this is not due to regulations. It's due to the market. And ditto when you look at oil and gas. The markets are critical, and you have to keep those in mind. What we do need to do, though, as those international markets change and the jobs decrease, is we have to come up with innovative, creative job training and other ways to utilize coal. Coal can be used for a variety of industrial processes.
Thank you. Scott, you have 1.5 minutes.
When we look at fossil fuels, it's going to continue to play an important role. I like to be able to pursue all of the above. Passed through the House of Representatives with bipartisan support, the Planning for American Energy Act literally enumerates in the bill wind, solar, geothermal, hydroelectric, oil, gas, oil shale, minerals. And I'm going to be supportive of Jordan Cove as well. When we're talking about China, guess who can help supply in the middle, in the Far East? We can. Right here out of Mesa County, out of the Piceance Basin. Let's get Jordan Cove up and running. Let's create jobs right here. Let's continue, from an environmental standpoint, to continue to see those technologies develop for wind, for solar, literally to be able to have that all-of-the-above platform to be able to do it. Good example is hydroelectric. I passed through the House of Representatives, Small Conduit and Hydroelectric and Jobs Act. One of the first opportunities when that was signed into law by President Obama was actually just down the road in Shavano Falls in Montrose, Colorado. An opportunity, again, for all of the above to be able to come together. This is something that we need to make sure that we're taking not only into consideration for wind and solar, but new technologies in responsible energy development with our traditional fuel sources as well. It's about our jobs, it's about our people, it's about revenues for our communities to be able to operate, and the future for our kids as well. We can create those multiple wins.
Thank you.
In the Diane, Colorado House and as a county commissioner, I have always supported an all-of-the-above strategy, and I will continue to do so in the U.S. Congress. I think there are several things we have to bear in mind about some of what we're hearing. We really need to look at those international markets. Those international markets for some energy sources are declining. With regard to hydro, I and Don Corum worked really hard on a micro-hydro bill.
Thanks, Diane. Our third question will come from Mike. Scott, you will be the first responder.
The 3rd Congressional District is home to much of Colorado's food production. Many producers rely on migrant workers to plant and harvest crops and attend to livestock, and they require these workers during specific stages of production. The H-2A program is broken and has failed these producers time and again. How will you work to fix this problem and find a practical solution to have workers arrive when needed?
I appreciate that question, Mike, because it is absolutely critical for our district. If you visit not only with the agricultural community, you visit with the hospitality industry, you visit with the construction industry, to be able to have those people to be able to fill those jobs. I actually visited and sent a letter to Kirsten Nelson to be able to address some of the H-2B and also make sure that we're having an opportunity to be able to address H-2A as well. I'm a supply side guy, that if we have the demand, let's have numbers that actually reflect what the actual demand is going to be and make sure that we're getting the workers in place so that our companies can actually produce products, get corn out of the field, and to be able to work. This is something that has been broken for an extended period of time, even returning visas. We need to be able to accelerate those and be able to have that process go faster. We're working on legislation in the House of Representatives to be able to achieve that. It's about creating jobs and making sure our businesses work here at home, and you identify it correctly. It is broken, and we are working to actually fix that right now in the House of Representatives.
Thank you.
I'm very glad to hear that the House is working on that, because this administration isn't. It is this administration that cut the number of H-2A and H-2B visas. I work a lot with people in ag and also in the resort industry. H-2A is critical for agriculture. Many of our agricultural businesses, whether it's sheep, whether it's the crops here, rely on those workers. Our resort industry relies on those workers. Why were those cut?
Diane, I think that you still have a minute left, and I'd like us to start that time now.
Okay, I was surprised when it came up so fast. So looking at this issue is absolutely critical, because agriculture needs labor. You may not know that the mean age of farmers and ranchers in Colorado is 59. What does that mean? It means that younger people aren't going into ranching and farming the way they used to. What I got an award for from both the Colorado Livestock Association and from the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union was a bill which attempted to remove obstacles for those young ranchers and farmers. We need something like that at the federal level. What we don't need at the federal level is limits on these critical 2A, and not for ag, but for resort, 2B visas. They're temporary. They're legal. We shouldn't be cutting back on legal immigration that helps agriculture. I've been working with agriculture in Rout County since the 1980s and throughout.
Thank you. Scott, you'll have 30 seconds for rebuttal.
I appreciate my opponent applauding the work that we're doing in the House of Representatives to be able to achieve those goals. Actually, through some of the letters that we'd sent, they did increase the H-2B visas that had come forward. But I hope you'll join me. One of the best and some of the best custodians of our public lands are our farmers and ranchers. It's critical to make sure that they have access to grazing. I know you disagree with that on public lands. I'm going to stand up for those farm and ranch communities and those opportunities to be able to maintain those jobs and to be able to grow our agricultural community.
Thank you. Diane, you will respond first to our fourth question, which will come from Bob.
This is a well-timed question. What do you see as the state's and the federal government's roles in managing and administering public lands?
Public lands are critical. They're critical for grazing. They're critical for our water. That's where the water comes from. And they're absolutely essential for our outdoor economy, for our resort economy. Many people rely on public lands. I will oppose, strongly oppose, any attempt to sell off public lands or to transfer them to the states. When these kinds of ideas were coming up when I was in the Colorado House, I checked with the Department of Natural Resources. It turns out we don't have the staff and we don't have the money to manage public lands. We barely manage our oil and gas permits now. If the DNR, the COGCC, had to deal with oil and gas on federal lands, there would be no way they could do it. So transferring to the states won't work, and selling them is, in my opinion, bad economically for all of us. And also, who would they sell to? You and I wouldn't be able to access those public lands for hunting, for fishing, for snowmobiling, for a wide variety of outdoor activities. Public lands are part of who we are in Western Colorado. And they're also important directly in our economy for those who directly make their living off them, but they also bring other businesses.
Thank you. Scott, you'll have 1.5 minutes to respond.
When we're talking about the interaction between the state and the federal government, I think we need to be bringing up sage-grouse. You know, we had great programs, having a collaborative effort right through our local communities, local farmers, ranchers, our state, to actually be able to reinvigorate that species. Unfortunately, Washington is overruling it. That's why I want to be able to move the BLM west, to be able to get the administrators out here on where we're actually being impacted. Our public lands are incredibly valuable. But if you say you don't want to have any conveyances, well, you might want to go down to Dolores County. Had a conveyance of land for a fire station, the first real responders to be able to go out. The Forest Service was in support of it. So just to completely close the door in terms of having conveyances back into our communities to be able to meet some immediate needs that are going to benefit not only the BLM but the Forest Service, I think is going to be ill-advised. Selling it off, no one's suggesting that. We need to make sure that we're protecting those public lands. I have a bill right now that we passed with bipartisan support in terms of the ski area retention fee bill. Make sure that we're keeping some of that money home to be able to enhance those opportunities, to be able to create something when we talk about all of the above. It's just not energy. It's also going to be outdoor recreation, the enjoyment of those public lands and our businesses' ability to be able to grow those jobs as well. That's legislation that we're supporting and will continue to advocate for.
Thank you.
Your Secretary of the Interior is the one who wants one size fits all for sage grouse, not us in Colorado. John Swartout has been working for many years to make sure that our Colorado plan is accepted in Washington. Ryan Zinke has said no. I went to my first ranch looking at the way private ranchers were able to really fix sage grouse habitat in 1995. There have been partnerships since then.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Club 20 Debates, featuring a debate between the candidates in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, Republican Scott Tipton and Democrat Diane Mitch Bush. Stay tuned to KVNF for more election coverage in the following weeks. And of course, these debates will be posted at kvnf.org. Thank you for listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot.